Welcome to the Media Mavens Podcast, brought to you by the Evergreen Network. The Media Mavens Podcast is where you'll hear the latest and greatest trends, topics, and tribulations with industry leaders. And here is your host of the Media Mavens Podcast. She is the original Media Maven, Sarah Miller.
Hi, this is Sarah Miller, CEO of Access Entertainment and your host for Media Mavens Podcast. I'm here today with my co-host, Joe Pyrus. What's up, Joey?
Hey, we're doing well here. Looking forward to possibly hitting the road, hopefully sometime soon.
Where are you going?
I don't know. I was thinking of going to San Diego.
Oh, okay. Because I sent you a text the other day about a huge conference in San Diego.
Exactly.
And it was really funny. Okay, I love you brought that up because I was just talking to a friend about taking off somewhere in my car, which is connected to my phone and the rest of my universe, which segues. I love how we just have all these odd little segues on a daily basis. But I'm super excited because we have Brian Biniak, who is a dear friend for a long time in the mobile space, who's now the founder, CEO of Connected Travel. So Brian, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, it's so funny because I love having you guys back on, who I've known forever in the industry, you know, from back then and how you guys have evolved. I mean, but technology's evolved so much and mobile. So, and I've known you from, you know, American Greetings, your startup Jack, Nokia, Microsoft. We just go on and on about the history. But my favorite thing with you right now is that you are with Connected Travel, because I'm all about the mobile and the startups and the technology. And there's so much we want to talk about since everybody's in COVID road tripping, you know, working in their cars and stuff. But like, got a few things on this podcast I want to cover. I love that it's mobile. Love that you're in a startup. Love this connected car. And I don't want to kind of take away from the innovation of what you're doing, but you had the company since 2016. And we also are working on small business success stories, because we all know that if you don't lean on tech, you're not going to thrive and survive. You guys literally are tech, which has gotten you through COVID. So I kind of want to talk about how you guys evolved through this past year as a small business or as a startup, because everything is now connected through mobile. So you're kind of in the sweet spot of the universe right now. Is that accurate?
It is. You know, and I think, you know, as you were talking about earlier, you've got your new car and you were able to connect your phone to your car and then project into that head unit, you know, your applications from your, I assume you have an iPhone.
And I do. And the little screen on my steel of my Mercedes, all of a sudden with Laguna, had my entire phone. I'm like, wait, I'm driving. Like, what the hell is texting and all this stuff going on my phone? It's just crazy. And it is an iPhone, but you also, what's interesting, the fintech side of this on the e-wallet, mm-hmm. where just not to be funny, but kind of be funny, because we all know about fintech and mobile payments. Does that mean if I drive by a gas station, it automatically cha-ching, cha-ching, because my car is my running mobile wallet?
Well, in terms of what we built with gas stations, we did a project with Honda called Honda Drive. And then inside, we built an application called Honda Drive. And then inside of CarPlay or Android Auto, when you project into your head unit, right, the car becomes a display. You know, and the phone is essentially like a computer, right? You plug it in and then there's a monitor in your car. You could ask your car to find fuel while you're driving by brands, right? If you want Chevron or Shell, because you have Shell reward points, and or find it by price, because you're price shopping. What's the best, you know, the best deal, and you're willing to drive a little farther for that, or location, because you're just about to run out of gas. Where's the closest gas? It'll find it for you, navigate you there. And then when you pull up to the pump, you tell the car your pump number. And then effectively, we set it up so the car talks to the pump and then they complete the transaction. So you don't have to put your credit card into the pump. You still have to get out and pump your own gas, but you don't have to do the payment. We did that for parking. So the car will find you parking by garage or street. And then you could pay ahead or reserve a space. We had integrated in Yelp for reservations, Grubhub for order ahead, Ticketmaster for ticketing. We did some work with Atom Tickets as well. So you could find, you know, theaters for sports events or whatever and buy those tickets in advance. And so it was a lot of these things that people, what they typically do is they're picking up their phone while they're driving and doing these things, which isn't safe. but we optimize the experience for the driver and for the drive and in motion to be able to do these things that you normally do. Because what's interesting, as we started getting into the car space, is that 45% of the time, now with COVID, it's even more, people are getting into the car to buy something to begin with. It's either to go shopping or to do chores. Commuting is not the number one reason to get in the car. It's the shop. So the car effectively is, you know, a shopping cart.
A retailer. Okay. I completely jumped way ahead of everything here because I got so many questions, like on the gas station, that barrier to entry, because most of these gas station or the little pumps are, they've got to be Bluetooth enabled. And I want to get all into that. That's my first big question, but I think I got to roll back a second and have you kind of tell us what connected travel is about. And then let's go back into my question and pick up where we left off on the sentence. I just love this idea. And I'm afraid if I go too deep into this, people can be like, wait, we forgot about what connected travel is. Give me a brief on connected travel.
So connected travel, the best way to describe it is that we've built a software platform to enable application services in connected vehicles and in and out of the vehicle. So sometimes it's, you know, an application that's on your mobile device, like your smartphone or a tablet. Sometimes it's embedded in the vehicle, but it can also be connected to other smart devices like a smartwatch or a smart assistant. So really independent of the devices, but it's about made for vehicle or vehicle optimized experiences. So, you know, what do I mean by that? So we, you know, as another example, another project we did with Honda, we built something called Honda Dream Drive. And they wanted to build an experience for passengers in the vehicle, where passengers connected to made-for-vehicle experience. So based upon my years at Nokia and just in the mobile space, we went out to a bunch of different companies and said, hey, we're going to build some original experiences for the car. Would you be interested in working with us? So we reached out to Lego and DC Comics and Silvergate Media, which owns Octonauts and AAA and Fandango and Atom Tickets and then iHeart and Univision and Entercom. And so, you know, we talked about how do we, you know, if you were to build something today that, you know, used all the data from the car and used things like voice and touch and location and all these things that were never possible before, what could you do? And so we built some really, you know, fun mixed reality games, a mixed reality comic book that was tied to location and movement. You know, with AAA, we took all those discounts and rewards that you have that you don't know that you have, and then we integrated it into the navigation system so that it would populate all of these great things around you and show you, you know, the value that exists there, you know, kind of merchandising it in the car, or you could ask it to find it. But we did it in a way for the passenger. So, you know, with kids, parents are always saying, what do you want to do? And the kids have no idea. And the parents have to do all the work. So we basically created an interface so kids could find stuff for them to do, but also see like the discount value that they can get. So that they learn about, it's like, oh, well, if we do this, then we can save 25%. You know, if we go here, or, you know, we can get tickets for, you know, Disneyland or Universal Studios or whatever. And anyway, it's just like, you know what, you guys find something to do. I got to drive, you know, but we built a whole gamification system around it too, with points. And so when you watch movie trailers, as an example, you play any of these games, you earn points. And then those points over time have value that you can redeem for like gift cards or into other rewards programs. So you can earn pizza from it or frozen yogurt or coffee or whatever, just by engaging in all these products and services in the car. Versus today, if you use anything that's on your phone in the car, the car company doesn't really participate in any of it. You just happen to be a monitor for that, even, and it's not optimized for the driver experience, or the passenger experience. So it really became that a Honda experience for Honda owners to have a better experience in a car.
Okay. So this takes me back to the whole mobile side of everything. Yeah. Cause I mean, so I know for a fact, and I love that Honda's doing that. Love that they're adapting. Mercedes-Benz has adapted to the whole connected car years ago, because we've been working with the president of Mercedes-Benz R&D, research and development for the US. They've been involved with the MEAs over the years as well. And they always used to give me a lot of flack to bring my Mercedes up to San Francisco to the center, and they would trick it out. I'm like, yeah, no, not doing that. the driving itself is not worth it, but I just got a new Mercedes and it is so ridiculously wired up. And I know the cars have built-in little mobile hotspots. Mercedes-Benz, I got to say, does a tremendous job on the connected car, and they have for a while, just because we kind of know what's been going on with them. So I think that's one of the reasons why I got mine. But I know there's also, I want to go back to the VTEL side of the e-wallet system. And I love that you could go buy something, pick up something. We're in COVID, so we're only going out. Like you said, we're not commuting. We're just going to have to run errands. And then I'm always stopping to look at my phone and look for something to see where it's at. I mean, it's not safe. I get it. But there's a, has to be a huge barrier to entry, because the gas station thing is tremendous to me. If you are road tripping and driving, you just got to pull up, get gas. But you have to connect and talk to the gas stations or the pumps with your car to, for that transaction. Is this going to be a big barrier to entry with all the gas stations turning over the gas pumps so they could talk to you mobily? Or are they already kind of there? We just don't know about it because we're not utilizing some of the technology that's already been built for us.
It's been happening for a while. You know, I think it falls into this category of contactless payments, right? And that's been going on for a while, and everything got accelerated by years, in some cases decades, based upon what, you know, has been going on with COVID. And so contactless payments is one of those things. Also, what you're seeing more and more is voice options for payments as well. You know, and obviously you get a little bit of that. And we've had that for a little bit with, you know, watches, Apple Watches as an example. Have you ever gone to the grocery store or something where you've forgotten, you know, your credit card, your wallet or whatever, and then you're like, you're just about to check out and you're like, oh my God, I don't have it. And all of a sudden, then you remember, you're like, oh, I have my watch. I don't need to worry about it. It's right here. My payment's right here. And I just hold up my wrist, you know, to the digital, you know, electronic point of sale, and I've paid. So this stuff is happening.
Well, it's a tap and go, like the tap and go. One of the things that's so, and I don't know if you know, Joe Lanham used to be a client of ours, tremendous, very well known in the fintech space. And you know, we were talking about this a year or two ago, you know, the little chips in your credit cards, you know, everybody wanted security, the silver chips, and they spend millions of dollars replacing all the bank cards with the little silver, the chip in it now for security. And by the time they rolled all of that out, the tap and go was already into the market. So they just spent billions of dollars in all the issuing the new cards. Well, we spent this money, we now have to see it through, but we're so far advanced in the tap and go, like you said, that it's just evolving quickly. And I noticed during COVID, people don't want to touch cash. They don't want to touch anything. More and more people were using, like, I don't have an Apple Watch. I have my phone. And I forgot I didn't have my card in my phone for the longest time. I never did it. So I actually had to sit like, oh, shit, I have to like put in my card in my phone. So now if I don't have my wallet, I can just tap and go with my phone from now on. And I love that I was actually kind of forced to use that and dial that up because of COVID versus having to dig out a credit card and nobody wanted to deal with cash anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that, again, that's an acceleration of these new advanced payment systems that are going out there. It there's a lot of complexities to it. Like if you pay for something in your vehicle and you need a receipt, right, for that when you go into, you know, a physical retail store or a parking lot or whatever it is, there's still that, and that gets pushed to your mobile device. You may purchase through the car, but you know, you can't take your car into the store, you know, when you need the receipt. So it's got to go somewhere. So the mobile phone is really or a mobile device is going to be a critical component of all of this. And people keep asking, who's going to be the winner and the loser? Is it going to be, you know, an embedded system in the vehicle, or is it going to be the mobile device? And we're like, it needs to be both, because there's so many different circumstances. You know, one of the things that we've done is we've been working, you know, over the last year with a company called Here, which does maps, and we built these transactable maps so that we've integrated in, you know, when you're looking for POIs in a map locations, that you can talk to those, that you can hear, you know, stories about, you know, those locations and then navigate through there and do your payments through the mapping system. And then recently we started doing the same thing with radio. So the radio that you hear in the car becomes transactable and you can interface with that. So if you hear an ad for a concert, you can just buy the tickets by talking to the radio broadcast. And so you can have a store, you can have a map and navigation, you can have, you know, audio, and that becomes, you know, it really transforms what's going on. It's if you think about it, you know, as an example, radio is the only ad channel in the car. There's no real advertising in the car, even though the car represents the majority of commerce in the country. So only around 20% on high end of commerce is online. So still 80% of what gets bought in a physical retail store. And less than 10% of people, you know, take public transportation or walk. So it's still, the car still represents 90% of those transactions that happen out there, or, you know, going from place to place. So the car and physical retail are tied, you know, hand in hand. So it only makes sense to bring these kinds of things into the car. So one ad channel in the US, it's about $15 billion a year, is focused on drivers directly. And then indirectly, the other ad channel is out of home, billboards, which is around $10, $12 billion a year. So you've got, you know, $25 billion to $30 billion that directly targets people in their cars. Then the majority of the time people are in the car, they're by themselves. And the majority of the time that they're in the car, they're going to buy something. And so only two ad channels, and they're CPM based, right? So it's all display. They're not measurable. You're not attributable, not transactable. So there's no CPAC, CPA, CPV, any of these other high end, you know, or premium ad product types. It's all just display. That's it. So now with the voice and interactivity, everything is changing in the car. And that's going to transform, you know, not just advertising to and from drivers, it's going to transform all of the programming that happens in the car. And you guys have probably seen these dashboards now that are coming out with these amazing displays that go from, you know, side to side in the car. Like if you look at the new Mercedes, EQ, the new electric vehicle, the whole dashboard is a screen. And there's a digital console that's dedicated to the driver. There's a center console that's shared. And there's even a console, you know, digital interface for the passenger on the driver's side as well. And it is fantastic. And what that's going to do is usher in a whole new world, content opportunities in the vehicle, because you got to put something in those displays.
I think those are going to be great for like those auto car drivers, like with the, you know, with the Tesla, the auto driver on their own. To me, there's so much distraction as it is to be looking at your screen, to looking at content. So it does make me a little nervous. But two questions I have. So is there like an LBS built into this? So if I'm driving and if I'm looking for a gas station or like food or whatever, and if I'm on the highway based on where I'm at, alert comes up that says, hey, in 20 miles, there is a rest stop or there's a gas or whatever. I mean, is there an LBS built into this whole thing?
Absolutely. You know, and it's funny because when we started the company in 2016, our first customer was USAA, which is the fifth largest auto insurance company in the country. And they asked us to take all of this gamification work that we were doing on mobile devices and apply it to behavior-based insurance. And they wanted us to figure out how can you make behavior-based insurance fun and engaging and change people's behaviors and sustain that behavior change. And we said, well, the starting point is you have to understand people's behaviors first. Not just that they speed a lot or they talk on the phone a lot or they hard brake a lot, but why? Where are they going when they do this? What are the circumstances around that? So we started with building this AI machine learning technology on mobile devices that can learn about your driving behaviors.
I was just going to ask you, is like AI coming into play here? Like literally, I was just ready to interject and ask you, how are you guys building the AI interface into this, or is that just a component layered on top of everything else?
That was kind of core to what we built. So we built everything ourselves. And what's fascinating with that is if you profile somebody's driving behaviors in the context, that means you're learning where people go and when and why and how, like how they actually drive. So it's possible, right, without you doing anything, based upon your driving, You can learn where somebody lives. You can learn where they work. You can learn their work hours, when they're early, late, or on time. You learn the places they go. So if most of the time you're in the car, you're going to buy something, then you learn all the places people shop. You learn where they get their groceries and their coffee and their gas and all of the other, you know, where they go to the gym, if ever. And then how long they stay at those locations and how often they go. And then from there, you start to learn about shopping. Indirectly, you learn about their shopping profiles and behaviors. You learn about their brand preferences and their brand loyalty, if they have any. You might find somebody who, you know, again, just they shop for fuel before they run out of gas versus somebody who goes to the same place all the time. You know, or somebody who goes to Starbucks religiously the same time every day of the week, and that person's never going to change their behavior. Even though there's a Pete's next door or on the way, why are you going to send that person an ad? You're going to want to look at people that have more opportunistic or flexible kind of shopping schedules, and you can derive all of that information. And it's not just about where they go, right? You might go to, you know, Whole Foods, but there's a coffee shop next door to Whole Foods, or there's a pressed juice next to Equinox, or there's, you know, a frozen yogurt place next to, you know, whatever. And then you create co-location opportunities because there's a chance that you're going to be able to add something to somebody's visit. It's not often that somebody's going to deviate from wherever they're going. You're all of a sudden then they get an ad for 50% off and you can get them to get off the freeway and then go buy something if they have a plan to be somewhere else. But you can provide those things. And that's where once you start to learn people's schedules, are they early for their schedule, on time, or they're late? And the last thing somebody wants to do is provision, you know, these offers to them while they're late. But you may do it once they get to their destination and push something to them for later in the day. Like, you know, as an example, if they've been late to everything that they're doing to the day, it's probably a great opportunity to offer them a discounted bottle of wine at the end of the day because, you know, they need to recover. But you can infer those things from, you know, the context of what's happening. And then we looked at, okay, this person's, you know, your first thing you do is you create awareness. Like a lot of people don't know. There was this one person who we said picked up her phone on average of 30 times on her commute to work every day, which was only 20 minutes. She's absolutely not. I don't do that. We're like, absolutely, you do. Please watch and see what you do. And she's like, I had no idea. Because I was every time she would stop at a stop light or a stop sign, she would pick up her phone. So she didn't put her phone away in the glove box and stop doing that. But, you know, going back to what I was saying, is like, think about what I just shared about auto insurance. Auto insurance and behavior-based insurance just revealed your whole retail life, you know, your physical retail life. And therefore, in and of itself, opens up this whole world of, you know, for advertising and commerce on top of insurance. And I'm pretty sure that the auto insurance industry has never considered the fact that they can do this. And more importantly, they're able to collect all this data when nobody else is allowed to do, you know, because Apple and Google are very rigorous about, you know, kind of pulling back on people's rights to do this. So, you know, now you start to look at then the partnerships that exist around the auto ecosystem to connect the dots. And is our auto insurance companies, are they just advertisers on radio or should they be partners to radio because they're actually able to collect all the information about the people that are in the car that the radio broadcasters can't, that in turn they need to then provision to all the advertisers on radio?
Interesting. You know, yeah, I can tell you right now, with that connected interface with Sarah's driving, her profile would be bad out of hell. And every insurance, I mean, I think Flo would probably be having a heart attack. But I'm not saying she's a bad driver.
I actually have had no speeding tickets and a clean record for 8.5 to 9 years. Short, minus a few parking tickets, but it's L.A.
Thanks to Uber, or were you actually driving yourself?
No, here's the thing. I'm not an Uber person just to get around unless it's, you know, back pre-COVID, all our Grammy parties, events and stuff. Yes, Uber was great, but I'm always in my car drive. Because, you know, for me to go somewhere, it's drive time to be on my phone to roll calls and stuff. Right now, it's an issue because my car is so like a freaking like jet. I got to make sure I keep it under the speed limit, but I actually have a perfect, by the way, Joey, a perfect driving record. Thank you very much.
Don't jinx it. Knock on wood.
1, 2, 3. Exactly.
One thing I'd like to ask, Brian, in vehicle payments, I mean, psychologists say that, you know, if you don't have to pull out a bill, if you don't have to pull out a credit card, it makes it a lot easier to spend more money. And I could see if I was a business, I would definitely get into this, because I was reading an article last night from Juniper Research that says right now about $500 million right now is being spent, but that is expected to go up by $81 million soon to about $86 billion spent in 2025 in just in-car purchases alone.
And think about that. You've got radio, AM, FM radio is still the number one audio channel in the car, right?
Satellite XM. I was always on XM in my last car.
Yeah, and they have advertising too, right? So you have all these people that are targeting you. And then think about the billboards. What if you're in the car and you're driving down the road and you see, we don't see many, you know, movie billboards these days, but we see a lot of Netflix, right? Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Disney Plus programs advertise. You could just ask your car, you know, to play the trailer. You know,
I stop and take a snapshot, especially when there's all the digital ones on Sunset. If I see a super badass, like something coming up, like, oh God, I'm going to forget. I'm running to a meeting, or if I don't forget, I will literally piss off people, slow down, or I'll just do a quick snapshot. And then when I get home, I'll be like, okay, I need to look that up. So that means I'll no longer be a traffic.
Yeah, you pass a restaurant and you're like, that sounds great. And then you ask, is there availability for a reservation tonight? You book a reservation.
Well, what is the lag time? Because we all know by the time you log on, you look for stuff, internet.
You don't log on. You just ask, just like you do with Amazon.
Like Siri. What's that restaurant, whatever it's called? Is there anything available?
That's right. Is there a special today? Did you get any new fish in at this?
But that's no difference. Just back up here. Because that's what I do on my cell phone with Siri anyways. Everybody asks Siri.
Okay, you're driving in a car. People spend at least on average in America, there's 282 million drivers, licensed drivers in the U.S., and they spend an average of an hour a day in the car.
Yeah. Was this pre-COVID or was this still
pre-COVID?
You're still, okay.
Yeah, pre-COVID. But it's the levels have gone back to almost normal, even though people haven't fully gone back to work. And, you know, people thought that people were going to spend less time in the car with Uber and Lyft. In fact, what's happened is people are spending more time in the car. But, you know, you're going to see gamification of experiences in the car. There's a lot of different. And so from a monetization standpoint, it's been an hour a day that people spend in the car that's been kind of locked up, right? Because of, for safety reasons, the best you could do is hear an audio ad. That's changing now, you know, now with voice and now with payments and now with, you know, somehow people getting away with some of these display screens that are massive, you know, and then they're backdooring in, right? It's like, oh, we're going to create Tesla TV. So when all these people go to Whole Foods to go charge up their car, they have something to do, you know, in their car while they're sitting there, and they can watch, you know, Netflix movie while they're in the car. But eventually, you know, you're also training people to do all of these things in the car, just like Apple and Google. What did they start with? They started with the idea that you can charge your phone in the car, right? And then, you know, then there was Bluetooth, and they started layering. And so now you've trained that, you know, the first thing you do is connect your phone in the car for battery charging. But then that is what lights up originally due to the projection. And now you don't need the connection. It's just there. So the phone is now part of the vehicle experience. And the phone is what, you know, now you see it. You can unlock your doors. You can turn on your car with your phone. You can, you know, you can change the climate in your car. You can set the media to whatever, you know, whatever you wanted to, so that when you get in your car, it's the perfect temperature. It's already running and it's playing whatever you want to play in the vehicle. And you've been able to do that all from your mobile device.
Well, that's just kind of like how much we've evolved, because I can literally turn on, turn off, set my alarm at the house with the app on my phone.
Connected.
If something happens to the remote, I can control my entire smart TV, Amazon, Netflix, anything, the actual TV, every single thing about it from my phone. I mean, I know a lot of the cars, you can't unlock the doors and turn them on with your phone. Actually, that's one thing I haven't figured out if I can do, or I can't do it with my car. But it's just, it's amazing how far we've come along. But remember the gas stations, like years ago, when you pull up and they would play little commercials or little news pieces and stuff?
They still do.
Oh, okay. So, but yeah, that's also a good way. I mean, not that anybody's going to want to look at their emails on a gas pump, you know, out in public. But I mean, if your car is able to connect and talk to the gas pump, can I not have to sit there for 5-10 minutes while I'm filling up my SUV, which takes a minute on the Rover? Why would I not be able to stream something off into the screen? Or what if Joe's on the other side getting gas, another pump, and I'm like, oh my God, check this out. I just can just like sling it across to his pump. Am I way too far in the future for this?
No, I think, look, would you, if you were sitting in the car and that same stream could be put in the car, if you could save, you know, $2 on a tank of gas for sitting there and watching, you know, that video, would you do it?
Yeah, I've been there for 5-10 minutes anyways.
Yeah. So, and as long as the gas station makes $3 on you watching that video, they'll probably do it. And it's, gas stations are interesting because they don't really, the margins on gas, for the most part, are very small. There's only a few states like Hawaii where they make money on gas. Otherwise, it's like the movie theaters. They make it from selling you all of the concessions inside the store. So you got to go buy, you know, the corn dog and the Slurpee and the gum and, you know, whatever else they're, you know, the Red Bull. That's how they make their money. If people don't go into the store, they don't make any money.
This, I think, you know, playing off on that, Brian, I think something, this connected car and doing kind of like shopping on there, I see a lot of impulse purchases being done by that, because Sarah and I could be driving down, you know, Ventura Boulevard and saying, you know what? Hey, the Dodgers are playing the Reds tonight. I want to go see the Dodgers. Hey, pick me up 2 tickets for the Dodgers. And I don't even think about it. I don't even think about paying for it. I just know I'm going to the Dodgers tonight.
Because you're in a different mindset when you're in the car, right? It's you, on one hand, you know, even though Sarah probably speeds up when she's in the car, you actually slow down, right? Because you can't multitask. You can't do as many things when you're in the car. So you have headspace to consider things that you wouldn't think of. I agree. I mean, that's a time where I'm like, oh, I could do planning for the weekend or nights when I otherwise don't have any time to do those kinds of things. I can also, you know, one of the fastest growing, you know, segments of audio are podcasts. So people are using the time, you know, to learn about things or to plan vacations or things like that. You could listen to a podcast on wine and buy everything that you hear about, or learn about new local restaurants and, you know, and get one of a, you know, buy a reservation, you know, with limited, you know, reservation for a new opening or things like that. And so that's where I'm suggesting that the programming in and of its, I mean, the reality of podcasts is all about, you know, call outs, right? So you've got on-air talent telling you about some product or service and on air, and that's why they're getting the premium on the advertising, because the talent's talking about it. Now you can have that interaction with the listener and actually sell. It becomes a true infomercial, right?
Well, it's like audiobooks. Some people say, oh, when we're driving, you know, everybody's all into audiobooks right now and everything. But like, so, you know, every week or every other week, you know, we just moved from our podcast to a huge network, Megaphone's one of the largest platforms. And we just got picked up by a pretty good sized network a few weeks ago. So we're now on a new network. We're on Apple, all the channels. And the stats came down. I think it's interesting you said that, because I was a little surprised that on the downloads versus being a computer, desktop versus mobile, more of our listeners are now in drive time, are now moving around, headphones on. They're not just staying stagnant at a computer listening to downloads and audio anymore. It's all mobile. Whatever, no matter what we do. And it's interesting because there's a few guys I know that you and I are both good friends with. We've worked with, you know, John Roberts, Down Tibbetts, and all the original crew of our mobile mafia is what I call it. But, and the thing is, though, is we always talk about this, because when we started the Mobile Excellence Awards 14 years ago, it was all about innovating leadership in mobile technology and entertainment. But we did move from mobile entertainment to mobile excellence, to media excellence, because mobile as a standalone is no longer a standalone. Everything we do, we're always mobile. We're moving, we're shopping, we're ordering, everything with a connected car. It is a multimedia platform on a multimedia screen right now. So we're constantly having this conversation of how we've evolved from mobile as a standalone to just multimedia, because I could be on any screen. I could be in my car. I could be wherever I want. What I love is that what you guys are doing at Connected Travel, I could order baseball tickets. I could go to a Clippers game, make flight reservations for dinner. I could do everything by just talking voice recognition AI into my car versus, like you said, having to speed up to hit a green or red light to quickly get on my phone again.
Yeah. And it's about, you know, the context of when you're engaging, right? And what did you know, it's interesting. The radio and television industry ratings come from Nielsen, right? Yep. Nielsen has their PPMs, their people meters. They put this little listening device on X thousands of people in the US. And whenever that person is in the vicinity of a broadcast where it can read that audio watermark, it said, oh, somebody's listening. And, you know, and that's the start time and the end time. The only time they know where they're doing it is when they're in their home. And that device only works within a, you know, in the city, but no, nothing else. So it never really knows about the context of when you're listening. Like when you're in the car, it doesn't know that you're listening to the radio in the car, or if you're in the office or the backyard, or, you know, sitting in the bathroom. It has no idea. And there's no context. It doesn't know what you did before you listened, what you're doing while you're listening, or what you're doing after you listen.
Or what time of the day either. Yeah, there's
no. But it knows the time. It knows day and time, but that's it, right? And city. And so, you know, so it doesn't have that intelligence that it could have. Now, it's so, therefore, you know, it doesn't know that when you're watching the TV, that then you, in turn, afterwards, if you ever responded to the ads and then went and bought that product or service that was what's being advertised. But it's possible now to have these dots starting to connect and fill in the blanks around this and have this persistent, you know, understanding and connection around what people are doing. And you could say, all right, it's, you're really just spying on people, you know, and certainly if people view it that way, they can opt out. The other way is, how are they optimizing, you know, for people who are creating value, you know, for people throughout their day, to save them time, to save them money, to, you know, to get them more, you know, when it makes sense in the moment in time they're most inspired. You know, we did a project with some NPR stations. When you're in the car and you're listening, you could donate, you know, to NPR by voice, or you could tip, you know, by voice, or you could share content with yourself or somebody else that was, you know, amazing story that you wanted to hear. And, you know, you couldn't finish, or you loved it and you wanted to share it with somebody else. Is how many times have you heard something and then you got to go find it after the fact? And when it comes time to find it, you're too busy to go look for it. And then it's gone.
Every day. I do that all the time. Yeah. I'm always like, if I'm at, was traveling to salon, I tear out ads of a magazine, fold it up. When I'm traveling, go, oh God, I have to like look into where I email myself the link, and then I just get buried and forget about it and it never existed. But let me ask you a question, Brian. Like, I can't go get connected. I mean, obviously my Mercedes comes with it. If my car comes with it, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But you, where is this? Like I'm going to say from the OEM side, but is it an OEM issue to where the cars and the manufacturers have to come out with the connected technology to sync up with your Android or your iPhone? Or is it the retailers have to sync up? I mean, where is the chicken? Is it in a chicken and egg syndrome here?
Yes, there's a little bit of that, right? Because only a percentage of cars, you know, starting really in maybe 2017 or so, you know, started having CarPlay and Android Auto. A lot of auto OEMs resisted, you know, doing that because they didn't want to concede the relationship with the driver and the passenger in the car. They didn't want to give up not just the relationship, but the data and all of that, you know, the experience, right? The user experience in the car. Over time, that's changed because more and more people are buying cars because their phone can connect and project, you know, their apps into the vehicle. So Apple and Google have done a very good job of that. Apple and Google have also restricted a lot of what happens inside of CarPlay and Android Auto. That's why a lot, you know, the things that we're talking about right now, you don't really see. That's innovation work that's done, you know, around that, but not, you know, pervasively. And part of that is there's been limitations on, you know, from a safety standpoint or from a, let's just say, a management standpoint of what people do and don't want to have in the car. Now, the auto OEMs, they have the ability with their relationships with Apple and Google to do a lot of things that if you try to do it just through Apple and Google directly, you can't. You have to go through their templates. But the, you know, an auto OEM like Honda said, you know what, we want to build our own experience. And there were some constraints, but significantly less than if you were to go through the templates. Now, what happens, you know, that, those are things that can get done very quickly, right? That's the beauty of mobile, is you can build relatively quickly and deploy and make changes, you know, in minutes, you know, in hours, you know, versus building something into the vehicle on average takes 3 to 5 years from the time that you conceive of it through, you know, all of the development iterations and testing until it's ready through production and then more testing. And then it gets deployed and then you have to support that same thing for 5 to 7 years. And in most vehicles, you can't make any changes. And so by the time it gets approved, it's already out of date. You know, so that's starting to change. The vehicle, you know, manufacturers are taking a play from Tesla, who is able to do, you know, over the air updates all the time, but a lot of them still can't do it. And so they're pushing the envelope on that. But very few standardized experiences in the car. One of the only standardized experiences is, you know, is AM/FM radio. And every car you go into, AM/FM radio, it's the same thing. You know, the UX is a little bit different, but even that's starting to evolve where now you can see, you know, the album artwork in there. And you can start to see, you know, not just the artwork for the music that you hear or the programming, you can see it for the ads that you hear or the podcasts. So you're starting to see content come in gradually, you know, synchronously with the broadcast as well. So to answer your questions, incredibly fragmented market. There's no dominant auto OEM in the country. Think, you know, the largest, you know, somewhere between 12 and 14%. General Motors, Ford, Toyota, they're kind of the leaders. But that's it. And then it gets smaller and smaller, you know, from there. Like, I don't know if you know this, but since you have a Mercedes, Mercedes only sells like 1 million cars a year in the US, like 1.2 million cars. That's it. They have a very small percentage of the, you know, they have one of the best cars. But when you look at BMW is smaller than that and Audi is smaller than that. So the high-end cars are a really small fraction of the market. You know, so Nissan and Honda and Hyundai, you know, those are the, along with Ford and Toyota and General Motors, you know, that's about 50% of the marketplace right there. But they're all, you know, Honda's like 9%. And because every make and model that they manufacture is different, and down to the, they call it the trim, right? The, all of the accessories that you get if you buy the base, you know, up to the high end, you get, again, totally fragmented in terms of the capabilities of those vehicles. So it's very hard. There's no way, like you can with a smartphone, to publish to, you know, hundreds of millions of, you know, iPhone owners with one single application that works across all of them. That doesn't exist in the vehicle yet. But an over-the-top solution is through Apple and Google, right? They bring uniformity across all of these different vehicles that isn't vehicle-dependent. Now, you can't get as fancy as some of these embedded systems when you look at these amazing dashboards, but that's okay because you have a better chance of making money if you go over the top.
Okay, this is so funny. This is a stupid story. So I have this super old Range Rover that I'm never going to get rid of. Like 90,000 miles, I'm just going to drive into the ground. It's my weekend car. And it's a Range Rover, whatever, it's a British car. Talk about technology. The only thing I ever thought was cool on this thing, which is so archaic, is there's no ads. It's not new. It's not like all these interfaces you're talking about, right? It's not a new one. But there's always a little ticker at the bottom of the radio panel that always promotes a mobile car wash. And I have a feeling it's either targeting whatever is a mobile car wash around you, because my car is either super dirty all the time, like it's a weekend car, or it's the only thing that the British, no disrespect, a Range Rover was able to really figure out what to do in the connected car was just to run mobile wash. It's the only thing for the past 2 years that ever comes up on them. It cracks me up, but the car is always dirty, so I just figured, yeah, well, they got something right. It's the only thing they took of everything you could do. Either pinpoint get gas or pinpoint wash your damn car. It's so funny, but it just shows how behind, I don't know, you know, I don't have a new Range Rover, but it's just funny that the old Rover, just mobile car wash constantly. That was their idea of mobile centric interface.
And you know what? It's better than somebody writing wash me on your back window because it's so dirty. Just do it privately. Just do it on the radio.
Does that annoy you when people do that?
I'm the one who does it.
There you go. So you need to get connected. So you just have a little voice saying, Joe, your car looks like crap. Wash it. Let me ask you a question. Like, actually, good question. Joe, if you had it, you're looking for a new car, a new truck, and it was like, what, I don't know, let me say what, $3,000, $4,000 more or less. Brian will correct me on this. Would you spend the extra money because you wanted the interface and connected car, or would you still say, yeah, no, I want to stay with where I'm at, just more evolved?
Honestly, right now, I would say right now, no. And it's just because there's so many local agencies, governments that are cracking down on anything that's connected inside a car. And that's just why. I mean, I think it would be very helpful, especially if you go on long trips and you don't know the area. But at the same time is, I mean, here in Tucson, they pull people over left and right for any, even if you're looking like you're looking on your phone.
Hey, so, Brian, yeah. I mean, I know there's a cost for full packages to no packages. That's it. But like this is interesting. The people you talked about this earlier, it's the whole privacy, people listening, the big brother. Well, how is what Joe's comment was of the whole government and the whole, how is, give me your feedback. Is that going to affect it? Is that on point? Is that going to get better? Is it always going to be an issue? I mean, where is this conversation going now that Joe brought this up?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that's happening in cities, as an example, it started here in LA, is the cities are mandating that all of the rideshare companies, fleet companies, share their data with the city because they're using the city streets for commercial purposes. So they need to manage that. They anonymize that. But I think you're going to start to see that more and more because, you know, smart cities and transportation networks and all of these things are dependent upon data. And that data, it needs to go into a central repository to make everything else operate. So, it, you know, it's funny. On one hand, you may say cities are going to be protecting you from all of this, but cities are going to be aggregators of all of this data as well. And it's going to come not just from commercial, but I think it's going to come from consumer as well. Especially as we move to semi-autonomous and autonomous vehicles in the city. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, most cars now have, that are sold today, have CarPlay and Android Auto capability. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's getting harder and harder to sell a new vehicle without it. And they use it, you know, for communication, right? To be able to make a phone call from your car. You know, to do, you can send, does voice to text and text to voice, you know, so it'll read out your text messages and your emails for you. And then there's the audio side of things. You can listen to podcasts and AM FM streaming radio and, you know, you get your Spotify and Pandora and all that. And then in audiobooks, and then you also get all of this mapping and navigation. And what's fascinating too is, you know, like General Motors just announced something with Mapbox this week where they have widgets that you can drop on top of your map in navigation system. So you can drop your radio widget on top or other kinds of things because it's kind of like the TV. Everybody wants to own their relationship with the consumer, right? And so they keep one-upping the other guy and they'll put like, you know, now you've got, you know, your Samsung smart TV and they own the UI regardless of whether or not you have Comcast or Charter or whoever is your cable company. They're controlling that, the overall user experience and the advertising in that UX. They've built an amazing ad business, you know, off of that. They finally kind of, I think you're going to see the same thing happen more and more in the car. The question is, how aggressive or assertive does the auto OEM want to be, you know, with owning that relationship? Some of the car companies are like, look, we make cars. We're going to let somebody else handle the software. That's kind of what, in some respects, people that use Android, right? They're like, let Google do all that stuff. We'll optimize it, but we're not going to build it. But other people feel that they need to control end-to-end every aspect of the consumer experience. Mercedes is one of those companies, and they're not going to concede that to some third party. So it's going to be highly, highly curated experience in the car.
I mean, the connected car is going to be huge between tech-savvy people. Because I think the tech, amazing, being a tech firm, and I love all this. And it is super easy once you get to figure it out. I didn't make a mistake because I know we're wrapping up here. I accidentally hit the OnStar or the emergency auto connect to a live body. I was trying to figure out my connected car. And so then I realized multitasking was not in my favor that day. So I was like, hi, stupid question. I'm just sitting here. All good. And so it was so funny that I did that. But this is such a huge conversation of where mobile innovation is going, Brian. And I know we're running out of time and we have to have you back on the podcast to talk more of this. But real quickly, Tech to Travel is out there. It is available real quickly. And this is GA. Is it available to certain cars, certain people, certain areas, or?
What I can say is that what is public right now is actually, funny enough, is available through Michelin and BF Goodrich. It's a product that we built called OnTrail. And it's a application. It's kind of like a Waze meets Strava for off-roading and overland. So if you go to ontrail.com, you can download it. And it's about, you know, people that are, you know, taking their car off the main streets and they're going out there to, you know, to drive in the mountains across rocks and through the mud and all that kind of stuff just for driving, or they're going places for fishing or camping or surfing or wherever that's kind of off the mainstream. But it's really about social mapping and navigation and enabling people to bring all that insight and intelligence as they capture all the information and share it with the whole network. And then we brought that same gamification experience in there to make it fun and rewarding. And it's fun. We're connecting the ecosystem. And one of our partners that Michelin and BF Goodrich brought into it is Red Bull. So there's going to be some really cool things coming out from them. So we have a lot of different things going on, but we're the guys that kind of enable or power these other companies to do the things that they're doing.
So for all you SUV off-roaders, ontrail.com?
Yes.
Okay. I know that's more of a Joe thing. And I know about OnTrails because I saw your social media post. I think you were on OnTrails when I the other day. It was so awesome having you on here, Brian. So anybody who needs any more information, where's a good place to send them for you?
If they want to reach out to me, they just go to bbiniak@connectedtravel.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about this.
My pleasure. It was great talking to you. And it's been way too long. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Yeah, I just think it's a slight, I mean, like we as a podcast evolves as technology, like we definitely want to have you back. So I think I'm going to speak for myself, not for Joe. There are so many other conversations down the path of AI, VR, connected cars that I want to have with you. So we're going to definitely have you back. But until then, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. And then, you know, we should bring in a few other people and make it even more exciting.
See, I'm not going to go get into this, but we just wrapped up our space series, had four or five of the most badass space guys from robotics to sustainability to bioecosystems on as a series. And so, oh yeah, we are in the works at Media Maven Podcast to bring you a lot more than just individual podcasts. But we'll get into all of that next week and later on. Joey, always good spending an afternoon with you.
Good. I look forward to our Terminator panel. I mean, the AI Terminator panel. There you go. Okay.
There you go.
That joke.
Okay. So that wasn't funny, but we'll work on a better one for next Wednesday. Until then, Sarah Miller, Media Mavens Podcast. We'll see everybody next Wednesday.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Media Mavens Podcast. If you don't want to miss an episode or download past episodes, subscribe to the Media Mavens Podcast on your favorite podcast provider or on the Evergreen Podcast Network. To learn more about the podcast or our guests, log on to www.mediamavenspodcast.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.